So, President DeLomo, the first question that I have is relatively blunt. why are you leaving Robert Morris?
It's basically it was a very personal decision to leave. In fact, my wife and I had pretty much decided that we'd probably stay at Robert Morris throughout the remaining of our careers. And that was pretty much what we decided on. And being from New Jersey originally, and our families are all, both our families are all back there, we had come to that decision that, you know, this is going to be where we were staying, you know, travel back and forth. And then all of a sudden, Ryder position came open, and I actually turned them down the first time when they contacted me, which was probably last spring. And then they contacted me a couple more times all the way up through the end of October. And at that point, at the end of October, when they pretty much completed their search process, they asked me if I'd at least consider meeting with some of the people there, and I did. And a lot of it was because, you know, family issues. And so when I talked to them, thinking that I'd just talk to them and, you know, it would just sort of be my obligation to satisfy my own mind and their mind that, you know, this is a better fit for me right now at Robert Morris, it just kind of evolved to the point where it seemed like it'd be a good opportunity as well as an opportunity to move back to our home. And both our mothers are still there, elderly mothers who are both not doing well health-wise. Our siblings are there. And so it kind of all came together very quickly, and that's the reason why I'm leaving.
Circling the wagons.
It really is. It really is. And we have a home in New Jersey as well, on the Jersey Shore, which we use as a sort of vacation home. And that's always been the home that we knew we'd eventually retire to. But, you know, that didn't hurt this decision.
In talking with a couple students, that they were surprised that you were leaving now, and also there was also the speculation that you were possibly leaving last year as well.
Right.
What changed from last year, possibly leaving last year, to possibly leaving now?
Right. Well, last year, I was the finalist for the LaSalle University search in Philadelphia, and that search was moving along, and thinking about being closer to home and thinking about the last phase of my career, I thought that might be an opportunity. Luckily, although it was kind of an unnerving experience, but luckily it worked out where I withdrew from that search at the very, very last seconds of that search because of some of the concerns I had about the job itself, some of the personal things in terms of the contract. And so it was a win-win situation for me to be able to walk away from that, although that was sort of a chaotic situation because, you know, my board knew full well that I was a finalist and it was probably going to be named the next president of LaSalle. And when I pulled the plug on it, we had to sort of, you know, regroup a little bit. And I was very, very honored by how the board and the university community welcomed me back with open arms. So that was that experience. And so after that experience, again, sort of relates to what the first question you asked me was, you know, thought long and hard about, okay, where are we in our lives and where do we want to be over the next 10, 15 years based on how long I thought I'm going to work for. And that's what we decided, you know, Robert Morris is where we want to be, both in terms of the people we've met, the success we've had here, the things we want to continue to do here. I think there's a lot more left to do here to make Robert Morris University even better than it is now. So all that was real exciting. And again, as things happen in life, you know, Ryder came out of left field and it was a tough decision.
Well, you talk about the successes that have happened here at Robert Morris. Tell me about those. Since you've been here, what's some of the best things that you've been involved in?
Well, been here 10 years, and when I came here in 2005, the university was at sort of a critical point in trying to figure out how it's going to move forward as an institution, particularly in light of the changing demographics and the changes that are going to take place in higher education. And a lot of schools were having a lot of problems with these changes. And many of those changes were sort of accelerated when the economy really took a dive in 2007, 2008. That really changed the economics of higher education pretty dramatically. So what we did was, back in 2005, and I felt this was probably very important, was that Robert Morris University had always been very, very good at preparing students for their careers. And you know, since we had mostly a professional focus to our programs, which we still do, it was sort of easy to kind of prepare the students in accounting and finance and, you know, communications and other areas, and even at the time, nursing was starting to develop, and engineering was just sort of getting off the ground. But what we had not done was we had not sort of created that that emotional connection, that full college experience. And so we really want to move away from that transactional approach to that more transformative experience, particularly for our traditional undergraduate students. And that meant we wanted to add more of a residential campus environment, more student life environment, more of a 24/7 campus that has a, more of a traditional feel to it. And that's what we set out to do. So it meant we have, you know, obviously continue to elevate the academics, and we're pursuing all the accreditations that are out there for the various professional schools, which is not easy to do, and it's a lot of investment you have to make in terms of resources, faculty, and so forth. But we also had to elevate the campus. You know, we had to build new dorms, we had to renovate dorms, we had to create, give our students a reason to want to be on campus. Even though we had enough beds when I first got here, you know, after that
you wanted
first,
more.
Yeah, wanted more, and plus I wanted to make sure that after your first year, back then we used to require freshmen to live on campus. And, you know, the day after that freshman year was over, they just took off to go live in, you know, apartments around campus. Well, we wanted to really elevate the quality of the housing and the kind of housing students want. And that meant also the whole student life component and really create that full college experience. And we made those investments. Those are pretty significant investments in terms of capital, in terms of student life budget, in terms of the academic budgets, and athletics. We want athletics to be part of it. You know, one of the things I felt, and I still do, that as a Division I school for sort of a mid-sized private university, that's a real asset. And we want to make sure we get the most bang for our buck out of that Division I sports, as well as club sports and so forth. And you know, we've been trying to, you know, balance those budgets and move those resources along. And that was also on top of an environment that, for some reason, the university had not spent a lot of time and energy and resources on trying to raise the bar from a fundraising standpoint. And you know, really incorporating more external donor dollars to the university as well. It's just what we charge our students from a tuition standpoint. And so we put a lot more energy and resources into the fundraising, the development operation, the alumni relations component. And that all goes hand in hand with that full college experience and having alums and others support through their donations, that kind of experience, but also setting endowments that allow future generations having similar, even better experiences. So all those pieces kind of coming together. And, you know, I felt that was a logical strategy, and it worked. But I have to say, when the economy really dropped in 2007, 2008, we had to sort of step back a little bit and take a deep breath, and we weathered that storm, and we're moving forward.
I want to go back. There was a lot in that question, but sure. I want to go back to one big thing that you talked about, the emphasis on residential students.
Yep.
For my undergrad, I stayed 4 years on campus. I had the option to commute, but I decided against it. And what I discovered with that was I was involved more on campus. I felt more connected to the university. Compared to a commuter student, what are the benefits that a residential student has specifically at Robert Morris?
Sure. Well, first of all, research has shown, you know, across universities that when you have more of a residential campus, that student experience is much more dynamic. And in fact, there's actually been quantitative research that shows that if you have about at least 60% of your undergraduate students living in university housing, that really triggers a whole slew of things in terms of student engagement, student involvement outside the classroom, student performance, student interaction with faculty and staff, the mentorship opportunities that come about from that, and that overall emotional connection that a student has. And with that emotional connection, it's not just to make students, you know, have a better time. It's part of a young person's personal development. Because obviously when you're looking at a traditional college student, their development in those critical 4 years is obviously, you know, content-wise, you know, whatever discipline they're studying, they have to learn the content. But it's also developing these other skills in terms of communication skills, interpersonal skills, conflict management skills, the ability to deal with organizations and teams and so forth. Those are what we call some of the softer skills. Those are the skills that are very, very important no matter what profession you go into. And so if you have those, you're able to develop that, you have a better chance of doing that in a residential environment that allows a traditional 18 to 22-year-old student really to develop those kinds of things. And so that's one of the major reasons why we wanted to really, and it wasn't like we were purely a commuter school, but we were not as residential as we wanted. So right now we have about 54% of our students living in university housing. When I came, we had about 35%. And our goal is to get that over 60%. But that means we have to build more housing to do that, and that's going to be down the road. But it really does. The levels of engagement are much, much more off the charts for on, you know, resident students versus commuter students. Now, not all. I mean, some commuter students get the full bang for their buck in that regard. And I know some students, you know, financially can't live on campus for 4 years and so forth. So we try to create sort of similar experiences for them that give them as much of the kind of outcomes that we're looking for as for them as well.
You touched on athletics, and currently we have the football program, Banaszak, finally taking over. Andy Toole just celebrated his 100th win. The soccer teams are doing well. Girls are under John Kowalski. And there was a little bit of retraction from some sports. Despite the retraction, how has the Robert Morris Athletics improved?
Well, as you know, we went from 23 sports to 16 sports, elimination of 7 sports, although it's a little bit of double counting because when you count men's track and field, that actually counts as 3 sports, indoor, outdoor, and cross country. And we've been studying about a year, a little bit more than a year, as to whether it made any sense to do it and which sports and how much we'd save. The basic decision was that when you looked at how much we allocated to our Division I sports program, within our conference, the Northeast Conference, we give the largest amount of money to our athletics programs than any other school in the conference. But when you used to break it down by per student athlete, we were the lowest. So that meant we were spending, you know, a lot of money on a lot of sports, but when it came down to the individual student athlete, it was the least. We knew that we couldn't sustain that model, and it just wasn't enhancing the overall program. You know, we've had a lot of success over the years in basketball, hockey, and football, and so forth, volleyball and nature. We said, let's see if we can eliminate some sports, save some monies over time, and we're talking probably about $1.3 million, you know, when we ended up eliminating those 7 sports. Not right away. We had to wait till the students kind of graduate or move on. But we had made the decision that we were going to keep that savings in athletics. It wasn't like we were pulling that money out into the rest of the university. So that meant the athletic director and the coaches and the programs that were remaining had access to a lot more funds based on what their needs were, whether it be more travel money, more recruiting money, more game money types of things. I mean, really figuring out how we're going to allocate that additional funds to make us even more competitive in those remaining sports, which hopefully then will generate more success, more funding, both in terms of donors, in terms of success in the NCAA. And so far, it's moving in the right direction. We're still probably about one more year left in terms of the remaining students, because we gave all the students the option of the sports we eliminated. And this is one thing I'm most proud of, and I know Craig Coleman, the athletic director, as well. That's a tough decision when you make those kinds of decisions, eliminating sports for the student athletes, the coaches, the families. I mean, you're basically shattering their dreams, and we know that. And we took great care to make sure we dealt with each of those students and listened to them. And we made a commitment that any student athlete in those programs, if they want to stay here, they'd stay on full scholarship, whatever they had. We provide them all the benefits they'd have as a student athlete if they chose to stay in terms of training and so forth. They basically had everything they would have other than just competing in their sport. And obviously, if somebody wanted to transfer or look to be released from their commitment, we gave them immediate releases. We'd help them locate other programs in the country. And, you know, some did and some didn't. I know the field hockey team at the time, which actually had their best year that year, which was still a relatively new program, a lot of those young ladies were able to be placed in some of the top programs in the country. So that, from a humanistic standpoint, I felt we did the best we possibly could to help address those concerns that those students had and their families, as well as the coaches. And we only eliminated one coaching position, actually, and that was our field hockey coach, which we then helped her get a position at another university. And so those savings that we're generating, we're seeing that we're able to allow us to compete at a higher level, you know, hopefully for the sports that are remaining.
Mm-hmm. Where do you see those improve? How do you see those improve?
Well, I think, you know, it's allowed our coaches, you know, typically the biggest deficits we have in our athletic programs are, one, our travel costs are the highest in any, because we're the furthest west school in our conference.
Right.
So every game, you know, most of our schools in our conference are in that New York, New Jersey, Connecticut region. And so they can do overnight games, you know, without having to, you know, have hotels. When we go East Coast, we have to have, you know, a long weekend with hotels and so on, and flights and we added a non-conference schedules, travel costs skyrocket. Well, that means when those costs go up, we have to pull operating budgets from recruiting dollars, from, you know, other kinds of, you know, uniforms and locker rooms. And so one of the biggest benefits we probably had is we were able to upgrade the men's and women's basketball locker rooms last year. And that really was a dramatic change, as well as creating a better offices for the men's basketball program, upgrading the women's basketball offices. And we have other plans on helping you know, facilities-wise, to help upgrade the athletics, and then give coaches, you know, additional travel money, additional recruiting money, and so forth. So, you know, a lot of times it comes down to recruiting athletes, and if you can't go see those athletes, it's really hard to get the best ones.
Let's still stick with Robert Morris. There's a lot of things that are going on right now that are going to see the fruits of their labor in the future. There's the School of Nursing that's currently still under construction. Greek Life is growing by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, it really is.
Including those things, and maybe there's a couple other things that I'm not sure of yet. What are more future plans that are going to be coming down the road for Robert Morris that you've had your hand in?
Well, they're, from a capital standpoint, and those are some of the obviously the biggest dollar changes that we have. You know, School of Nursing, as you mentioned, is being built right now, and hopefully if the weather holds out, that'll be ready to open in the fall. And that allows nursing as well as nuclear medicine out of Benjamin Rush all move into the new building. So it opens up Benjamin Rush, and it'll open up John Jay, where nursing is right now, which will allow then engineering, math, and science, which is one of our fastest growing schools, to be able to take over that space. We also have another need that tackles both student life as well as academics, that we desperately need on this campus a rec center of some sort that allows for the non-Division I athletes to have places to go and play basketball, do track, or whatever the case, you know, exercise types of things. We have fitness centers, but this is more the, you know, more the recreational types of things. So what we'd like to do is, if we can build a rec center on campus, it will allow us then to basically close John Jay Gym and convert that for engineering, math, and science. Because what they really need in engineering, math, and science is they need more classrooms, but they really need more labs. And that big space allows you to actually do two floors, and you can really put a lot of labs in there. But we can't do that until we have a rec center that replaces John Jay, because John Jay right now is used 24/7 for rec space. And we have some ideas whether we build a freestanding facility on campus for rec center, or do we convert the Sewell Center into a rec center. But to do that, and then one of the things we're working on is possibly building a new basketball arena on campus.
Okay.
And that's still in sort of a developmental stage in terms of the idea as well as potential funding sources. Something like that would have to be totally fundraised dollars. It wouldn't be operating dollars.
So obviously there's no timetable for moving forward.
But, I mean, it's with each day, without giving a lot of details, it seems like it may become more of a reality than not. So the conversations are going pretty well so far. And, again, if that can happen, it would provide, obviously, not only a state-of-the-art facility for our men's and women's basketball program, as well as probably volleyball, women's volleyball. It would then free up John Jay to be converted into that more of a rec center concept, which would then allow us to do John Jay. And so all these pieces are kind of connected, and it's all tied back to creating, you know, more active space, more student athletic / rec space on campus. Because as you become, and rec space would be a little bit combination of sort of a student center rec space, which is really important, particularly as we become more of a residential campus. You have to have those kinds of spaces.
You want that hub.
Absolutely, absolutely. We really don't have a student center. I mean, Nicholson is sort of, but it's really not. And we need that central space for both recreation as well as clubs and organizations to be able to meet. And that's sort of long term. But when I say long term, I'm thinking, you know, this all could be done, hopefully, if everything worked well on the stadium, the arena part. You know, you'd be talking, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road that, well, this could become a reality.
So with the academic buildings, with the School of Nursing, with the School of Engineering possibly moving as well, what does that say about the education of Robert Morris? What sets our School of Nursing apart from Pitt's or the other schools in the area? If I wanted to go for nursing, sell me the School of Nursing for Robert Morris.
Well, you know, it's funny. You know, nursing and health sciences, as well as engineering, math, and science, are our two fastest growing schools in the university. And it's not because those schools have declined, it's just because these schools are relatively new. And that's the interesting. Both those schools are 15 years or less in terms of the longevity. And on one hand, people may say, well, that's a disadvantage because you're not well established, you've not been around for, you know, hundreds of years like some other programs have been. I argue the opposite. Actually, it's allowed us to be more creative in the curriculum. It's allowed us to bring in a curriculum, use nursing, for example. You know, nursing, as most of the medical field, is changing so dramatically that it's becoming much more technology-driven and so forth. So programs that have been around a long time, it's a real culture change the way they've always taught the particular discipline. Let's say use nursing as an example. And when we came on board about, you know, 12, 13 years ago, we came in, and the kinds of faculty and the kind of administration that brought in was those kinds of faculty that were very much forward-thinking. So they, right from the start, were able to create a culture that incorporates some of the new areas of nursing that sort of puts us at a cutting edge, mm-hmm. with technology particularly, and how we approach the different programs. So it, I think it's allowed us to gain a reputation of respect within the industry much quicker than otherwise would have done if you went the more traditional route. And same thing with engineering, math, and science. Look at engineering, for example. I mean, engineering is a great example of that. You know, and this was before my time, so I can't even take credit for it. But when they created a school of engineering here, they were obviously concerned. You have CMU, you have Pitt, world-class universities here with engineering. What programs in engineering would they go with? Well, one of the programs they went with was manufacturing engineering. And probably everybody thought they were crazy at the time. This is 15 years ago when everybody in the country saying engineering is going down the drain in this country. It's all going overseas to China and Vietnam and so forth. Why would you ever even think about creating an engineering management program, manufacturing engineering program? And it was the kind of engineering they were envisioning that was going to be the growth part, the whole much more 3D printing and the much more computerized type of engineering. It's not an old-fashioned drill press anymore, but it's computerized type of engineering and manufacturing. And so they created it, and at first no one understood it. It was dead, weren't much enrollments. And you know, when I first got here, I was saying, what is this stuff, and why are we doing this? Every other school in the country is getting rid of manufacturing engineering. We stuck with it, and now it's become... People understand what it is now, and we've become sort of the leaders in that area because that's what we've been doing. Our faculty are adjusted to it. That's the kind of research they do, the kind of application they do. And so it's allowed us to develop, again, like nursing, in a relatively short period of time, become noticed for our expertise in a very unique aspect of the changing field of engineering. So that's why newness can be an advantage sometimes, particularly in universities that are very traditional. Universities are hard to change in the way we do things. And when you bring things from scratch, it allows you to jumpstart a program, and we've been able to do that.
The international program has also grown by leaps and bounds in the last few years. Any time that I have to swing down to student life, the multicultural services office is pretty much a revolving door of students coming in and out. How has it become such a big aspect of the student life at Robert Morris?
Well, it's funny when go back to that transformative experience I was talking about earlier. One of the things I really noticed when I came here was that there really was not much international activity at all, both in terms of bringing international students here, which was really almost non-existent, and also sending our domestic students overseas for some study abroad or even short-term travel courses. Beginning to do some study tour courses, but not very much. That, I felt, was clearly a piece that was missing in the puzzle. And one of the things I know through my academic career, both as a faculty member and as a dean of business school, then as vice president, now as president. In all my years of higher education and all the things that go on with student development and student education, there was nothing that transforms a student more than having some international exposure in their education. I mean, and I saw it firsthand. I was very fortunate at a point of my career to be in charge of the international office at another university as part of my academic responsibilities. And it just becomes a very powerful learning experience. And I always knew at Robert Morris University, again, one of the things we always do very well is preparing our students for their careers and getting those placement rates. And I said early on, if we're going to continue doing that in a changing world that's becoming much more global, and our students are not getting that international experience, we are doing a disservice to them. And I don't care what profession you go into, whether it be business, whether it be education, whether it be nonprofit, whatever, whether it be medicine, there's going to be an international component to it. So we've got to figure out a way to jumpstart that whole international experience for our students. And if you look at our core values, when we did our first strategic plan, one of the first core values that was the easiest one to develop was the global perspective. That's when everybody agreed on. It was just a matter of figuring out, all right, how are we going to do it? And that's when we began to really talk about it and put money into it, enhance the Center for Global Engagement, and really begin talking about getting our students abroad, but also bringing international students here to create that excitement. We have a ways to go. I think we have more to do, but I think that's been one of the real successes in the last 10 years is the changing that whole mentality. Now, and I realize a lot of our students, you know, didn't have the financial ability, they didn't have the backgrounds and so forth, and so we had to help not only give people the resources to do it or help them to develop the resources, but also give them that sense of confidence, that sense of security. You know, a lot of parents called up and said, you want to send my son or daughter to, you know, Beijing, you know, or, you know, to Turkey or to, you know, Italy and England and so forth. Ireland are pretty safe places to go, but other places are a little bit more dynamic. Parents get a little concerned. Nicaragua. I mean, look at the Nicaraguan program in nursing. It's just exploded. I venture to say that probably 80% of our new enrollees every year in nursing school are coming because of the Nick Ruffin program. They've heard about it. They know how powerful that experience is, and that's become a real selling point for them. So incorporating not only the technology in nursing, but the international component to that education has played a very, very important role. And so my personal goal has always been that every undergraduate student at this university should graduate with at least one international educational experience before they go. I think then we really have done our job.
Now, you say that there's still some improvements that need done with the international program. Let's look university-wide as a whole. With you leaving at the end of the spring semester, what are things that you still think could not necessarily be improved upon, but things that you think need to come to Robert Morris?
Right. Well, I think, you know, a lot of the things, we've implemented a lot of the things that need to happen at any high-quality university. Mm-hmm. It's just now a matter of continuing them and maybe in some cases maybe trying to accelerate some of those. Everything from, you know, the academics and the reputation of our programs. You know, I'm very convinced that the quality of our programs is very high. And that's one of the reasons why the first things we did was make sure we get all those professional accreditations. You know, it's one thing to have Middle States accreditation for the entire university, which is very important, but, you know, when you have professional programs, business, engineering, nursing, education, and so forth, it's critical to have your own disciplines validate the quality of those programs. And we've done that. And that's very important. But some programs obviously gain more notoriety than other programs. So use actuarial science as an example. I mean, that truly is a nationally recognized program, not by us, but by, you know, the Society of Actuarials, naming us one of the centers of excellence in the United States. If we can get more programs, you know, and that just takes time to get the programs recognized by your peers out there as to the quality of that. And they measure the quality. They're looking at the quality of your faculty, what they do both in the classroom, both in their research, the quality of your students, the outcomes of your students, what they do, not just in placement, but where they go and what kinds of things they do upon graduation. And so we continuously want to raise the bar academically and gain a reputation. We look at nursing, look at engineering, as we're developing those kinds of reputations, you begin to see that spread throughout the region and the country. But so I think academically, you're always having to continue to raise the bar and you know, improve yourself. But then the whole thing, you know, the international, making sure more and more of our students have access and understand the importance of that, and starting early. The campus life, the residence life, making sure those programs are not just there, but they're actually adding to the educational experience. The student engagement program is probably the best example. You know, I'm very proud of the fact that we created the student engagement program 3 or 4 years ago, to the point now we have the transcript, it's a requirement, and a lot of our students are getting very active. What I want to see now is not only having students do a lot of the activities that are required under the student engagement program, but how can we help them measure and determine the effectiveness of that engagement? Mm-hmm. You know, the reflective component of it. What have I actually learned from that study abroad? What have I actually learned from that internship? Because this is what employers are really going to be looking for down the road. They're going to look for, not only do you have the content, and not only do you have the internships, for example, because everybody's going to have that, that's critically important, but they also want to know, what did you do in that internship? What did you learn? And how did you grow from that? What value can you add based on the success you may have had in that internship, but also based on the failure you may have had in that internship? They're looking for that value, and so I wanted to make sure we incorporate that more reflective learning assessment that goes on in those engaged learning activities that complement the in-class experience. And that just comes through, you know, a maturity process as we continue to refine the program and get more comfortable with it, and as we our students understand what's expected of them in that regard. So I think all those pieces tie into sort of the next phase of what we're trying to measure at the university is not just your initial placement, but how well you're doing over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And this is where you may have heard about, you know, one of the things we're talking about in our new strategic plan is this whole idea of the Gallup-Purdue Index, which actually looks at ways in which you can measure how effective the college experience was at Robert Morris University, and how that experience impacted them over a lifetime in terms of their career, mm-hmm. in terms of professional engagement in their careers, but also in terms of their personal life and what they call the personal fulfillment measures that they have. And we're actually measuring that now, and we want that to begin to affect how we create that experience at the university that, again, not only prepares you for your first job, because that's very important, and we're never going to walk away from that, but also first job but over a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And it's not only measured by your salary or anything like that. It's measured what you see as engaging you in your profession, whatever that may be, whether you're a social worker, whether you're an investment banker, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a doctor, whether you're a teacher. It's how fulfilled you are in that particular profession that you choose and how well we prepared you for that, but also how fulfilled you are in your personal life. Mm-hmm. And that sounds a little esoteric to people, but I think that's the real value of a college education. If we can begin to identify those kinds of experiences, that's what we call the value proposition of coming to Robert Morris University. Why would a student come to this university? Going back to your question, you know, nursing or engineering, but as a university as a whole, why would I come here? Because we're preparing you for those types of things, both immediate as well as long term. Mm-hmm.
Leaving after 10 years, you have a very strong educational philosophy. You've got a very good business philosophy, and all the things that you've been able to change and improve at Robert Morris. What's your legacy here? And don't tell me it's the sidewalks. I know you're very proud about the sidewalks. But let's outside of the sidewalks, what do you want to be remembered as?
Probably two things, and they're related. One is helping create that transformative experience. I mean, really bringing in that full college emotional, almost portfolio learning experience for our students. And that, again, that had to operate on a number of different levels. It required a lot of resources, a lot of financial management of that process, and, you know, getting faculty to buy into it, getting staff to buy into it, getting students to buy into it. And so that's first and foremost. And I think we've transformed this university pretty dramatically in 10 years. And secondly, though, I think the last thing I mentioned was the you know, broadening that perspective of what it really means to be an effective university in development of young people, not only just in terms of traditional undergraduate students, but even graduate students, non-traditional students, and now online students. We're trying to figure out how to incorporate some of those concepts into an online student experience. But really realizing that higher education is changing, the economics are changing, the value of a degree is changing today. And so we've got to, one of the things Robert Morris, I think, has always been very good at is that we've always been sort of nimble. We've always been sort of on the edge in terms of not being afraid to make some changes in the way we approach things. And that's a real plus to our culture. And I think we've sort of accelerated that. But looking at how we can really add value to a person over a lifetime and tying in the alumni relations, the fundraising component, the overall connection through athletics and everything else we do in the university, that to me, if that happens, if that continues to happen, and I think it will, I'd be even more satisfied and honored, you know, 10, 20 years down the road if I see those kinds of things continue on. Because I really do think, I've said it before in public, and I really mean it, I think the university is positioned to be even stronger in the future than it is now.
So what are your wishes for the new president?
Outside
of possibly having a building named after you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll get a sidewalk named after you.
Sure.
The new president, I think, is... Hopefully it's somebody, you know, first of all, you have to do the I say it's mundane, but it's really not. I mean, you have to handle the business side of the university. And it still comes down to finances and resources and make sure you have the resources. And that's our biggest challenge, making sure you have enough resources to do the kinds of things. And making the kinds of decisions that require you to balance those resources. Because, you know, if we had unlimited funds, it'd be easy to run these places. I mean, you could do a zillion things that make a lot of sense, but you don't. And so you've got to make trade-offs, and you've got to decide, okay, we need to do this now. That means we have to put this off, this other thing off for a while, but then down the road we want to be able to get this piece in. And being able to bring them all together to make sense, and not just to do things sporadically. And so I think somebody who has, you know, strong academic sense, strong financial sense, someone who has a strategic focus, and somebody who can bring together a very diverse group of people. Running a university, I say this quite often, is, you know, people say, oh, you're a CEO. I said, no, I'm far from CEO. Well, it's more like being a mayor of a small town. Yeah. And so, you know, people work here, people live here, we entertain people, we give healthcare to people, we build buildings here, we pave roads, we plow roads. I mean, we have a police force. We are managing a small city. And as a politician or as a mayor, you've got to satisfy a number of diverse constituents that may be with you on one project, but may not be with you on another project, and you got to figure out, how do I bring these parties together to have an overall strategic vision to move the university forward? And that's the fun of it. I really believe I'm a better president than I was vice president. When I was vice president of a certain area of the university, you know, I did my area well, but I wanted to manage your area and your area and everybody else's area. Well, as a vice president, you get in trouble doing that when you cross lines. As a president, one of the first things I thought was, how could I get involved in all the areas to bring them all together into one? And hopefully they'll get, the next president will have a similar vision and ability. Now, again, and a person may have a different, you know, may tweak things differently, and that's good. I think you need different ideas, because I think each president if they're successful, is the right president for that particular time in that institution's evolution. Ed Nicholson before me was very good at creating, moving the university from a business specialty school to a more comprehensive university by bringing five schools of study. And he fought those battles, he did that, and that was a real skill. My skill set was very different, and I was able to then take that more comprehensive university and create more of that full college experience and provide more of a stronger financial foundation to it, which will allow more resources down the road. And hopefully the next president will add to another component with that. I'm not sure what that is, but they'll take it to the next level of its evolution.
Are you having any say in the selection process?
No.
You don't? Do you want any say? Do you want any influence?
No. I mean, I think, you know, the selection committee, I mean, the board has asked me, you know, my thoughts on what the next president should be looking at or thinking about, what kind of backgrounds they should have. But I'm just one of many. Because actually, there's going to be an advisory group. There actually is an advisory group that's going to be soliciting information from all the university community on the kinds of things they want the next president, kind of background, skills, areas of focus that they want to help in the search process.
So whenever you move to Rider, what are your goals whenever you step into that role?
Well, you know, my goal is to learn as much about the university as possible. And that's, you know, I think it's very important for any new president to come in to really listen initially and really get a feel for what the university is. I have a little feel for it, but you know, you don't know all the details yet. But I really want to see it. It's, and their history is very similar to Robert Morris in many respects. Started as a business school, only a lot older. They started in 1865. And they've evolved to a more of a comprehensive university with more liberal arts as well as business and science and so forth. But I think they're in a position to, what I would like to see is I think adding that full student experience is something I think is really important. And they've done a little bit of it, but I think that's an area that I could help really move the university forward and creating that emotional connection. They have a little bit of it already, but I think there's ways in which you can kind of bring all the pieces together like we've done here to help to create that connection to their institution, both in terms of their initial placement as well as their lifetime experiences.
Is that one of the big needs of it?
Yeah, I think it is. You know what it really is? It's every school is going through this. How do you create that unique value proposition that your school can offer at the price you charge and so forth? Because, you know, two things we know. Higher education is more important now today than ever it's been before. I mean, it used to be years ago, high school degree was a requirement, and now that's no longer sufficient. And that's one reason why President Obama is talking about trying to create community college as sort of the next high school experience. But really, it's the four-year degree that is the new high school degree. And you have to have it. So more and more students, even though the demographics are going down, more and more of a percentage of students need to get that college degree, which creates some issues based on their preparation and so forth. But that becomes very, very important. But at the same time, you always have the cost of education, how many people can actually afford that price. Because it's not like universities are just, you know, fat, dumb, and happy, and they spend money like drunken sailors. It's expensive to run these operations. I mean, you're running a city, like I said, you're running buildings, you're running, you know, there's a lot of expense. It's a very labor-intensive industry. It's still about 60-70% of your costs are faculty-related. You know, machines can't replace faculty. You know, online people think it doesn't replace the faculty. So it's always going to have, it's going to be expensive. But how do you figure out, how do you provide that kind of experience for your students that they can afford and they see the value in it? It's an investment as opposed to just purely an expense. And that takes a lot of convincing people to how you do that. And that's one of the things I want to help Rider do is really identify what their value proposition is and how to really drive it home and improve it. And I still need to learn more about that myself. Mm-hmm. But those are the things I think are very, very important. And again, as a traditional residential campus, I think, you know, there's a lot of exciting things to be part of that university. One area, for example, they have not done much on online education. We've really begun doing more on online. And I think that's an important component of your portfolio. You have traditional on-campus students, but you also have your adult students, many of whom now are moving to a more online format. And if you don't get into that market, you're really going to be missing a big part of the growing part of the higher education market.
Is that the first thing that you want to implement at Rider, or is there something else that you've already have in mind that, you know, in your first 100 days that you want to look at?
Well, I want to look at that. I mean, I know they've done a little bit of it, but they have not really done much in terms of fully online programs for adult students. Mm-hmm. And I, first of all, I want to find out why. And I think I probably know there's probably some obstacles along the way, which is common in a lot of universities, and how we might be able to overcome those obstacles. Because that is an important component of, I think, any institution's portfolio going forward. But also, I want to look at some of the programs. They don't have some programs that are really the hot programs. You really don't have nursing. Mm-hmm. Although they're getting much more into health sciences, but not much in nursing. They don't have engineering, but they have a lot more in other sciences, whether it be geoscience and so forth. Are there ways in which we might be able to get in some of those other areas that are really growth areas, not just in terms of higher education, but growth areas for the economy in the United mm-hmm. States? And I think that's going to take a little bit of study and find out, are there any obstacles to creating new programs?
Mm-hmm. What about the athletics?
Oh, athletics, I mean, it's interesting. They're very similar to us, although their major sports have been, over the years, baseball has been their key sport, basketball obviously is, women's field hockey and wrestling have been their top sports. And so they have a pretty rich history on those sports, and they're actually at a more manageable number than we were. When we were at 23, that was pretty high. That was more than Pitt, West Virginia, Duquesne, and so forth. So they're a little bit more of a manageable number, but they have facility needs like we do. I mean, although they have more land. They have a lot of land, and even though we have 230 acres here, the problem is a lot of it you can't really build on. It's hillside. They've been able to do one thing that I think the current president did very well. They moved all their athletic fields in the back of the campus, so baseball field, softball field, soccer, lacrosse. I mean, they don't have lacrosse either, but that's another sport we're looking at. And they have, field hockey and so forth. Basketball arena is not at the level it should be, and so. Maybe I'll start a basketball, get a project going for a basketball arena here, then I'll hopefully do one there. They really do need a new arena, I think. Because they've renovated their arena, but it's very small, and it's not the caliber that in that conference, which is the MAC conference, they need to have a better conference, another better arena.
And then we'll see Ryder and Robert Morris playing basketball for non-conference play, right?
That's right.
That's right.
Actually, Ryder used to be in the Northeast Conference.
Oh, really?
Before I got here, they left because, and they used to dominate. They dominated for a long time, and then they went to the MAC conference, and they've had okay experience. They were not like they had when they were in the Northeast Conference. But yeah, I'd love to see them. I like to see all my former schools play together. St. Joe's, Robert Morris, Ryder, Canisius was there. Although I'll be back in the same conference with Canisius now.
So, in closing, is there anything that you want to say to the students before you leave in the spring?
Oh wow.
Commencement's going to be tough for you.
It is going to be very, very tough. I don't know. The students, I mean, it's funny. When we started talking about this whole college experience transforming, it really was the class that graduated, I think, 2 years ago. So that would have been six years ago. That freshman class came in, and that, to me, was a tipping point. And when I said that, I noticed that when that freshman class came in, and we had just, we were putting all these pieces together, and the question, is it going to work? Is it really going to change the culture of the university? That freshman class, from day one when they enrolled, it's like they had a whole different act. Their expectation of what they want from their college experience finally aligned with what we were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And the way that was indicated to us was, from day one, they walked in. Freshmen usually come into campus and they're like shy, quiet, we'll let the upperclassmen kind of direct us how we're going to do. That class came in and said, no, we're in charge. And they got very involved from day one. And we started seeing organizations explode. We saw them get involved in leadership positions. They really said, this is the campus where we want to be here 24/7. And that, to me, was exciting. As I see now, each class comes in with that same kind of attitude and actually ups it a little bit. I really say, the university is, the students own the university in that regard. So, and we tell everybody, make it your own. And students are listening to that. And, I really want to thank the students for making this all work for us, because I came in with a strategy, and I thought I knew what I was doing. I was praying that I knew what I was doing, and the students made it work. It's really them who really create the environment that we did. So I thank them, and I asked them to continue, while they're here, obviously, to continue to make it a better, better place. But more importantly, when they leave, I want the alumni to really feel this is still their university. They want this to succeed 20, 30, 40 years down the road. The best thing I hear from alumni is that when they said to me, they graduated 30 years ago, I say, boy, if I applied today, I couldn't get in.
Yeah.
That to me is code for saying, thank you for making this university succeed, because as it succeeds, the value of my degree continues to go up. And I'm proud of the institution I'm in, and therefore I want to help support future generations of students to do even better. So I think that'll happen. I think the whole alumni piece has already shown that students who have graduated in the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years have a whole different attitude towards the university, and continue doing that. Make it special, because it really is a special place.
President Luma, thank you for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it.